Knowing what consumers want to buy and when they want to buy it is a challenge that all retailers face. For fashion-driven companies, that challenge is even greater since styles change so quickly. Technology solutions continue to try and solve that problem through a wide range of data-driven applications, but most predictions lack accuracy and tend to be lagging indicators of real demand. I'm Jane Singer, and welcome to A Seat at the Table. Today, we're speaking with Ganesh Subramanian, founder of Stylumia, a market intelligence tech company. Using technology to gather and analyze market data is not new. What is new is Stylumia's approach. The company has developed a proprietary demand ranking system based on a wide range of traditional and non-traditional signals that it picks up from across the internet. Ganesh, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jane, for getting me on this podcast. These are very challenging times, but at the same time, these challenging times also provide great opportunities. And, at Stylumia, where we are right now, we looked at holistically that how is fashion forecasting and prediction happening today? And this was back in 2015. We looked at and say that it still continues to be largely a push-driven value chain where we as experts predict what we think that customers will buy and make products and push it through the chain. And globally, if I just have to give you a statistic, that in 2018, the world produced 150 billion garments. Out of that, 50 billion garments never sold a single piece, 50.
Really?
Yes. And 50 billion garments sold at discount. Now, if you just look at the magnitude, close to 2/3 of what we make do not connect really with the customers the way we wanted to connect. Then we looked at the fundamental behind, which means in spite of having all the solutions of today that happened in 2015, and then we said, let's dissect this problem and say, what are the various components? The first component is what idea gets into the funnel, which is, I call it the what problem. Are we putting ideas which have low probability of winning? How do we ensure that we have high probability of winning ideas getting into the design funnel? There our fundamental impact is, insight is that currently either it's intuitive fashion forecast, or even if it's data driven, we see that we use supply signals to derive fashion trends. It's like this, right? You can collect a lot of data today and say, what is happening? Now, what is happening is a supply signal, right? So it's like going through a mall and say, coming out and say, I saw a lot of red on the windows, which means red is in trend. Now, actually, that's not so. A lot of red also do not sell well. If you just go by what's out there, then we are going to have the same error of supply. And we know 2/3 of fashion do not meet the consumer demand the way we want it. Then how do we solve this problem? Therefore, we said we developed what is called a demand sign, where we inverted the pyramid and say, instead of we thinking what customer want, let's reverse the pyramid and then say, let's look at what's happening in the consumer side of the business. And let's see what all they are looking for at various levels of the water, from luxury to designer to fashion shows to retail to brand to social media. Entire hierarchy of what's happening in the consumer side. And today, consumers are ahead of brands, and we're all trying to catch up. Now, we curate all of this data by collecting them at internet scale. And like Google ranks pages, we rank products. For click of a few clicks, one can get what are the winning ideas from my source of inspiration in my country, in the category of choice, in the brand of choice, in the designer of choice, in the price point of choice, and in the time span. Now, that's what we have a solution called a market intelligence solution. We renamed it recently called CIT, Consumer Intelligence Solution. That's one of it. That's also a what problem, so that you pick the winning ideas into the funnel. Now, after that, brands, what they do is the designers then put all of these inspirations and come out with new designs, arguably so. And now the question is whether these new designs, will they do well? Which of these new designs will do better than the other, which means we have to style grade them. And then you put a bet on each of these styles, put X dollars on each of these styles. Now, the question is, this process also today is fragmented, a fair amount of collective judgment which gets into it. There are a lot of brands who go to the wholesalers, look, buy or book orders, and then come back and say the aggregated orders reflect the demand. The wholesalers who buy, they also don't sell very well. They also left with a lot of stock, which means we are taking a lot of signals, they themselves may not be completely true. For the whole idea is we developed what is called, it's called Stylomi Apollo. Stylomi Apollo is a prediction engine for predicting demand of every single new product and what's the potential demand of them so that it automatically, algorithmically grades all the new products. It can also predict the demand in terms of dollar value or unit volumes for those new products. The data is so much and the market is so dynamic, it's very, very important that even human is not able to make, you know, informed decisions because of so many moving parts. So that's the how much problem. And where we are progressively moving now is we recently launched a solution called Story, store.y, which helps you predictively distribute these products to the right stores by decoding the taste of each of the stores if it is offline, as and when the offline picks up. Now, the whole point is right from getting the right ideas from data at internet scale using consumer intelligence to predicting the right quantity and putting it in the right place. For that's what we have been solving over the last 4 years. And one more last thing is, which is in our lab, is how do we use generative adversarial networks to create winning design ideas? For that's something which is not commercial. For that's a bit of what has happened so far, Jane.
So getting back to the first thing that you were talking about, how are you able to gather this data from such a very large and diversified pool?
Yeah, great question, Jane. Basically, we collect public information across brands and retailers from their e-commerce websites. If it's influencers through the influencer handles in platforms like Instagram, and fashion shows from the public available fashion show images just after the fashion show is over. So it's not the question of just the information, and the key thing is that what do we do with that information? How do we find out demand which is not a public information? Right. Therefore, we have developed a proprietary demand ranking engine. You call it demand sensing engine. What it does is it spots in all the products in these brands and retailers on a daily basis, collects a lot of demand signals. And our engine, what it does is on a biweekly basis, it ranks all products. For example, let's say if you want to know winning products from Zara Spain or H&M so-and-so or a retailer in Japan, or it's Nordstrom, or wherever, whichever part of the world, whether it's Farfetch, you get to know in few clicks what are the highly probable winning products in these platforms.
So what would you consider to be a demand signal? What would be an example of that?
See, a demand signal is something that which consumers which works for the consumer, and also it works for the retailer to a large extent, because if it doesn't work for the consumer to a large extent, also doesn't work for the retailer. Sometimes it could also be working for the retailer, for example, margin, but not working for the customer. But we pick signals which are a combination of both. Some signals could be, for example, amount of views a product is getting, amount of visibility a product is getting, right? That's an indication, because no retailer will give you high visibility if a product doesn't have merit. And we also look at not at a one particular point in the life cycle. We look at all of this on time series. So we have a complete evolution of every product over time relative to other products. That's a whole objective. This is one of it. We also look at velocity of stock out, how fast a product is going out of stock, which is an indication that the product is selling better. But having said that, you might ask, there are some products where we don't buy depth. How do you figure out whether the depth is low? How do you still figure out? Now, what we look at is we look at peak performance of the product, not the average performance of the product. So in effect, we try to figure out the velocity of sale of each of these products related to each other. There are other signals like customer ratings and reviews, and there are different signals which could be different across various brands and retailers across the world.
Okay, so you're collecting a wide range of data and then ranking it to determine consumer demand, or at least what people seem to be reacting to.
Yeah, absolutely. And because we do it across the waterfall, that if there is a client, if there is a brand, we actually ask them, which are the countries you would like to travel and get inspired by?
Mm.
Which are the brands you look up to? And if they want to look at what are the opportunity misses, what's happening in my market right now, what's working and what's not working, then you get to see the reality of now. For the solution gives you both what's now and also what's going to happen. And you will also get trend view of all of this. So it's not about which are the products. We also get into fine details. Recently, we partnered with Pantone, where not only you get to see winning products, you also get to see winning colors.
So how are you doing that? In other words, how are you identifying the winning colors?
Yeah, very interesting. The winning is very important, right? Now, that's Tilumia's fundamental key difference, one of the key differentiators. So now that we've ranked all the products, now we have a percentage, top 10 percentile of products, and we have bottom 10 percentile of products. We have a lot of mediocres. From the winning products, using our computer vision engine, we extract the fashion from all the images first, and then we extract the pixels of colors from those images. We don't go by text because in fashion, you cannot narrate attributes. A lot of people go by pink as a color. There are so many hues of color. Which pink is working well?
That's right. Yes.
Absolutely. Therefore, what you do is we segment it, remove the color element from there, and we convert that into an RGB, and then we pass on that to Pantone, get the Pantone color with that collaboration. For we are able to present winning Pantone colors, which are very actionable, along with the silhouette, along with the design elements, ready to adapt by our customers.
Okay, that's really interesting. You know, looking at all the different information that you're presenting, and because it's done quite scientifically, right, using data and using algorithms and so forth, roughly what would you say the margin of error is?
Let me just give you some, you know, case studies where we have worked with different groups across the world, where we've improved, you know, full price sell-through by absolute 7-8% in just 2-3 seasons. Now, what that means is that if somebody is having a full price sell-through, now this is also with adoption in a part of the range from, let's say, from 50%, we have moved them to 58 to 60%. But over a period of time, what happens is that, and you know, right, in fashion, the margin itself is 10%.
Right.
We all end up with 10% EBITDA. Now, if you increase your full price sell-through by 10%, right, now you save straight away 5% margin, which is 50% of your profitability today. In other words, you increase your profitability by 50%, right? This I'm talking about in 3 seasons of adoption. So I think the key point is none of this will work if you don't adopt. And this is a different way of working. And I think over the last 3-4 years, we've been working with our clients to, one, buy into the philosophy. Second is to adopt. And once people start seeing the results, right, it automatically starts rolling. Because of the lead time involved, it takes some time to see the result.
Of course.
But having said that, it's very important to try unless you never see. Not only that, right, now products made with Stylumia's intelligence. If you make products with Stylumia intelligence, we have seen cases where we are able to improve up to 60% lift in revenue velocity, right? And there are extreme cases where we have improved by 10x, but I'm just saying, if I just overall look at the population, 60% lift in revenue velocity. That's the sale improvement. Reduction of inventory by anywhere between 30 to 40%, which means if you're sitting with 4 months of inventory, straight away you shave away 30 to 45 days of stock because products are selling very well. And more you start using this, that you can, all of these metrics can start coming down. Yeah, the whole idea is to improve from the current baseline. This is just from the market intelligence solution. And, you know, maybe we'll come to the prediction of demand. You know, there's a lot of leverage there too.
Right now, there's certain data based on the tools that we have available that enable people like yourselves to capture consumer data. What do you see that's under development that will enhance our ability to gain even better data?
No, absolutely. That's a great question, Jane. Most of us today are collecting a lot of information within the spectrum of fashion. But if you just look at how is fashion consumption triggered by, right? What are the sources or causes of fashion consumption? I think fashion consumption is also driven by what's happening around in the environment, what's happening in the social space, and what's just not limited to the segment of fashion. For one, I see the breadth and width of data sources need to enhance completely. For example, let's say the weather forecast data, I'm just giving, right? For example, in 2018, entire Europe placed a huge over bet on jackets. All of them underestimated the global warming.
Ah, oh, interesting.
No, just imagine this, right? All of us making the same mistake. We're all following each other. He's making this jacket, that brand is making this, and all of us are making and putting. But what we all missed is a global warming and temperature changes that people don't need as much jackets. and also the quality of jackets. They want lighter jackets. Now, the question, therefore, is I think we just need to bring width and depth of data.
Right.
That's definitely one area. I call them alternate data deployment along with fashion to see the future. And, you know, lots of micro movements are happening. I think more and more I see that we just need to get into reflexive fashion. Because what's happening is that we are getting into uncertain times. We're not prepared for times like this. We, as an industry, we're sitting with very rigid, very long supply chains, right? Even those who are crushing it, they're crushing it incrementally. Now, the question is, I think we really need to see technologies to bring the supply chain shorter and shorter to an extent and say, can we all produce what is exactly needed? Right. It's a long way. We are not in a made to order situation. But the question is constantly, a lot of people are working here to say that how do we crush the entire fashion supply chain? And we know through last few months, supply chains have crashed. Those who had two collections in a year or four seasons in a year, now thinking about 6 to 8 seasons, and they are moving towards 12 seasons. The old terminologies of seasons are crushing completely. Digitization of design is happening. How can we stop making samples and start taking orders? Like 3D, as you know, is coming up. How can you predict using a 3D design directly? Using Stylumia's prediction tool, for example.
Can you?
Yeah, we can predict just with a 3D design. Why do you even need to make a sample? We'll tell you good, bad, ugly with a 3D design.
So in other words, what you're proposing is to be able to use the data from Stylumia to go direct to a 3D sample in order to shorten your lead time and also to cut out a lot of the cost on sampling.
Absolutely. Why sampling? The entire even B2B transactions in terms of, you know, whether this will work well or not. See, we need samples for a lot of people to get validations. We show to a set of people, we show to the next set of people. All of that can be digitized.
And you're able to tie that in with what you're doing on the front end, on the data side of things, with Stylumia.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting, yeah. It's inching us closer to a supply chain that is more of an on-demand supply chain, as opposed to what you were talking about in the beginning, where people are trying to predict well in advance of when they would actually sell the product.
Absolutely.
And I think that's sort of been a missing link for many companies.
Yeah. And Jane, I just want to maybe, you know, elaborate a bit more in terms of, you know, just not about product intelligence. So to win in D2C, you brought the right context. To win in D2C, let's imagine we are most of the manufacturers, let's say if they want to go to D2C or most of the existing brands, for them, D2C was one of the channels. For that become now a prime channel. What's the difference between a D2C channel, having worked leading, you know, one of the largest fashion online retailers of India, leading from a startup to $1 billion-plus company. You know, I have the experience also of seeing both the offline and online world. In D2C business, what's very important is that it's just not your product. Your product, relevant content, right? In the right way, it's very important. And you just need to be digitally pleasing. Very, very important that you have to therefore get one, consumer awareness. Now, consumer awareness building through digital mediums is a separate subject by itself for a moment. Let's say you build that. Second is when the customer comes, you just need to make your proposition very, very digitally appealing. Now, digitally appealing is photography, it's imagery, it's content.
Right, right.
We sometimes take content for granted. For example, using our intelligence, not only we know winning products, we also bring winning text.
Oh, winning. Really? Oh, interesting.
Absolutely. Therefore, it's not about winning product. It's about winning shoots. The kind of photography which is working very well, right? For example, using one of our tools, we realized that if the model is facing the audience, those products were not doing well. If the model is tilting his or her head away from the audience, away from the consumer on the screen, it was doing better. Now, this is after heat mapping, and we figured out that this is the pattern we saw across winning products in select brands and retailers. For its winning photo shoots, it's also winning text. See, in digital, what happens? People either search through Google or any search platform, be it Amazon, they search, right? When they search, it's very important that the search words are very dynamic. The consumer parlance of words many a times are very different from how brands call their descriptions. And how do you align this consumer language with the brand's language? Now, this is also something that we provide. In fact, there are large retailers in US using our platform to augment their textual data, master data. For your master data, an image or your salesman.
So their master data would be the data that they're collecting directly themselves, and then they would be using your data to compare and contrast to what they're collecting.
Yeah, absolutely. For example, should I call it midi dress, or should I call it short dress? If consumer is searching short dress and you have called it mini or midi dress, your product is not showing up.
That's a very good point.
Now, the point is about taking care of consumers' interaction in the digital medium through text, the perception of imagery, of course, getting the products right. You can actually spoil a great product through a relatively bad shoot and poor descriptions.
You know, I think that's a very interesting point that you bring up, because I have noticed that when I look at descriptions of products, if you're looking at, let's say, eBay or whatever, and people, it's just individual people, their way of describing a product is actually a lot more engaging than when you're looking at products on a corporate website. When I say a corporate website, I mean a big brand's website, where the description is a bit dry and oftentimes doesn't include, actually, surprisingly, as much product detail as what you would get when you're looking at someone who is selling on, I'm just using eBay as an example. I'm sure it's the same on other, you know, similar sites. So it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think you're right. How you describe the product and all the detail you give is very, very important in terms of making the final sale.
Absolutely. It's also making you relevant. I think in digital D2C, there are two things very important. And if you actually read how all these algorithms work, whether you want to sell on a multi-brand retailer, like be it Zalando in Germany, be it ASOS or Amazon or any retailer for that matter, you need to be discoverable. For what the retailer is looking for always is two parameters: relevance and performance. How relevant are you for the consumer real time? Now, I think we all need to ask very deeply, how relevant is my proposition at this point of time? Now, imagine if you are a one-year calendar, how do you answer this question? Am I relevant today? Am I relevant right now? Well, that's one question. Second, is my imagery relevant? Are my text relevant? Is my pricing relevant? For relevance in various key dimensions the consumer is looking for. And they are going to rank all products based on how relevant are you, right? And second is, how performing are you? Now, you get in digital, you improve your business if you get more visibility. Simple as that. As long as you're performing, you get more and more impressions, more chances of that people will click you. You go to PDP, you go to cart, and you get converted. Therefore, if somebody is starting today, there's a message for people who want to accelerate their digital business. My few inputs on this is, you just need to, digital is not like scaling linear. It's like a flywheel. How do you run this digital flywheel? Digital flywheel is like a huge iron rim, which you need to now push and start rotating. Initially, you need a lot of inertia, which means you have to break the inertia and move it, which means what? You don't spend your marketing dollars, for example, in a linear way if you want to get traction. If you want to get traction, you need to go through a non-linear route and say, okay, my marketing budget for this year is 8% average. For you start with 20-30% and slide it down and create the momentum.
Very interesting point, yeah.
A lot of people, what they do is they do the average bit and then say, like, I used to spend marketing budget of 7%. That's okay when your flywheel is already running in offline retail. In online retail, a lot of people don't know you, right? Now, in that market, if you have to create the initial momentum, you just need to start non-linear. For example, I'll give you this. It'll be very counterintuitive. Many people won't even believe that this is the right thing to do, but let me share with you. What happens in offline retail? You start with full price sales, and then you start discounting towards the end of the season.
Yes, of course.
Yes. Now, it works reverse here. If you want momentum in online, you start with 30% discount and come back to 8% or 10% discount. It's very counterintuitive, but it works, right? But the question here is that, now, discount is just one lever. I told you marketing is another lever. I'm not suggesting that you should start with a discount. But just to give you a perspective, that you need to create and move this flywheel, extremely competitive market, But the moment you get the eyeballs, and of course you have relevance and performance, it starts to pay you exponentially. In other words, if you don't do well, you continue not to do well. In fact, you go spiral down to poor performance.
What you've brought up is a very interesting observation, and I think it's probably, and I don't want to say it's the secret sauce, but I think it's a good part of the recipe.
Absolutely. See, where I'm coming from is if you just go into all of this, we've been now talking about various dimensions. And I would sum it all and say that to win D2C, you just need to have real-time codes relevance and real-time performance. Now, to be real-time relevance, I think each one of us need to ask, how close to real-time are we in everything that we do? And product supply chain is just one of the elements. Real-time on text, real-time on imagery, real-time on marketing, real-time on pricing, all of that, right? And real-time trend spotting. Now, if you just put it all together, lots of today's processes are nowhere close to real-time. They are batched. What we think in autumn 21 will do well. And there is a report which is extremely static and that people are going through and making big decisions. Between now and 2021 autumn, there's so much which will change.
That's right, sure.
I think the question is, we all need to think, how close to real time are we going to go? And it purely depends on, you know, the strategy of the brand that they can go closer. Unless you have built iconic brands that anything you do, you set the trend. Even they are facing challenge today.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anybody has an immunity card in this particular market. And I'm not saying specifically with regard to the pandemic. I think that even before the pandemic, even as you were saying, the mightiest of brands cannot be guaranteed that people are going to buy anything that they put out there. They also have to be quite reactive to the market.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm interested then, just as a closing thought, what do you see as the next step? What would be the next step? What are some of the things that we can look forward to in the next year or 2 years or 3 years?
Time is going to be a huge differentiator. When I say time is a differentiator, it's timing.
Okay.
We can all buy revenue. We can all buy money. Money can always come back. Time will never come back.
That's very true.
3 years back, 4 years back, those who are 5 years back, if somebody took on interest in digital, they developed digital really very well. Today, they are facing less hardship compared to those who are waking up in a crisis. So for me, I think the big shift is going to be timing as a leverage, timing as a differentiator, just not about product. For somebody asks, people keep on asking us and say, what's the white space in the market? I said, you do everything what you do, just change the timing. You have a differentiator which can't be copied easily.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that people are looking at everything but that.
Absolutely. People are saying that, tell me what will happen in 2022. I think, is that the right question to ask right now?
Yeah, I mean, nobody really can predict the future.
Yeah, I see that as a trend. And, you know, I see those who catch timing as their differentiator, apart from everything else, will win in the time to come. I see that in the industry, we can all collaborate. I think, like in the technology world, there is so much of integration which is happening, right? In the technology world, so many tools talk to each other. I see in fashion that a lot of discrete tools are available. They all don't talk to each other today, a very less of integration. I think ecosystem partnership is a big movement I see. 3D companies working with intelligence companies working with ERPs, all of this coming together and to solve a holistic problem. We can actually multiply all the benefits to the customers by bringing it all together. It's all happening in from manufacturing to design tools to intelligent solutions like this to supply chain. So I see integration happening. The last one is skill upgrade is something that I see very, very critical.
In which areas do you see a talent gap?
We're not used to technology adoption and a fast pace. How do we adopt technology from the time it comes? An experimental culture. In a D2C business, it's full of experiments. If I have to give a technological framework, it's called A-B test. How can we make a fashion industry which is used to A-B test? Not just in the front end of the website, Can we do A-B test in design? Can we do A-B test in manufacturing? Can we do A-B test? Now, A-B tests are instant validations of various things which are available. Yes, when you do a lot of experiments, 20% of it will work. Now, if you go with that, I think we will all see a huge acceleration of our versions of businesses changing, transforming. The cost of experiment today is very, very low compared to the kind of wastage we are all having.
Ganesh, thank you so much and really appreciate your time and joining us today and wish you tremendous success.
So, absolutely, Jane. Thanks for inviting me and it was great sharing my few bits to the audience today and hope it adds some value.
What's your biggest supply chain challenge? Please let us know in the comments section. If you enjoyed this episode of A Seat at the Table, please subscribe to our podcast, where you'll get to hear from some of the industry's leaders and innovators. And if you're looking for an easier way to keep up to date on sourcing shifts, new technologies, supply chain strategies, emerging markets, and of course, e-commerce, head on over to our website, insidefashionlive.net. And consider subscribing to our weekly newsletters. You'll also find all of our contact information there. Please feel free to contact us with any ideas, suggestions, or questions. That's insidefashionlive.net.